Thank you, Madam Chair Lady. In front of you, I have condensed a chronology of the period so that you don't lose me entirely and we try to put things in perspective. If you hate chronology and specifically dates as much as I do, then you have letters from A to R. I've given you the option. I want to call your attention to some of the highlights and quickly just assure you that the chronology is to put the matters that I would like to discuss with you in perspective. Dates are of relatively little importance. Our experience with Bavel begins with, unfortunately, the first Golus, the first of the four after Mitzrayim, and that's Golus Bavel in 586 BCE when the first Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. And obviously, Jews were exiled, and from that exile we were able to grow the Yeshua, the salvation, to be able to come back, for Ezra and Nehemiah to come back. Item B, at the permission and upon their request to Koresh Melech Paras, by that time took over Bavel, and he allowed the reestablishment of the second Jewish state, so to speak, the settlement in Eretz Yisrael and the building of the second Beis Hamikdash. You will notice that in items C, D, and L, there are three foreign words, foreign to those who are not the students of history, but critical. For Bavel is not a monolith. It is not the same Babylonian people that we had in the times of the Churban Bayis Rishon as we have in Churban Bayis Sheni, and throughout the period of the Amoraim. And your next history lecture is going to be about the Babylonian Talmud, Talmud Bavli. These are not the same people, and this is a critical matter. In item C, you see that ruling in Babylonia were the heirs of Alexander the Great, the Seleucids. They were based in Syria, and this is Iraq. Bavel is Iraq. You'll go home and take a look at your atlases to see exactly where it is. But it is today's Iraq that was under the administration of the Syrian-based Seleucids. That gave us Antiochus, by the way. They were the ones who gave us Antiochus. They were the ones who gave us Hanukkah. They were conquered and driven out of this territory of Bavel by the Parthians, who are Iranians, more to the north. Not entirely Ayatollahs, but boy, they had the makings of Ayatollahs of today. And then you will look at item L, the Sasanians. They were real prized possession, true Persians, true Iranians, who would overthrow the Parthians in the year 226 of the Common Era. And they ruled in Babylonia, and I make a note over there, and we're going to come back to it, that Jewish autonomy, self-rule, was no longer recognized by them. We lived in Persia, in Paras, and in Bavel, Iraq, with relative autonomy, until the Ayatollah mentalities come and take over, and then we are decimated. There is a mark, there is a zecher, there is a birthright mark that is indelibly impressed upon what we do even until today in shul that will remind us of the Sasanian dynasty. And were not that mark there, and I will disclose it to you a while down the pike, I don't know that I would have ever bothered you with the Sasanians. But if I'm ready to talking about Sasanians, then I have to tell you who came before, and those are the Parthians, and who came before, those were the Seleucids. Let's begin. We'll come back to this as the Odyssey unfolds. The first, the Seleucids, and that period, I just want to make one simple comment. This is the period of the Maccabean revolt in Eretz Yisrael. This is the period of the near impossible, where a family and a small cadre of frum Jews decided to take a bunch of assimilating Jews and try to knock some sense into their head. They used Maya Kahana tactics, and they got away with it, and they weren't condemned in the federations. The federations were left breathless. The press didn't exist at that time. And we saw the trueness of the light of the menorah of Torah come about and stop focusing on oil. That's phalatkis. The Ness is the Ness of humanity, Jewish humanity, of Rabin Ba'ad Mi'atim. That a few Jews decided to become activists and go berserk. Because one Chazar Fresa over there decided in Modin to go ahead and shuckle with his talis and tefillin in the name of Avodah Zarah, and comes an old Rav, a Matisyo ben Yochanan Kohen Gadol, and stabs him in the guts publicly. Maya Kahana tactics, Ayatollah tactics, and is able to lead his family and the few who were still the minority, 10%, 20%, who were still loyal to Kedushas HaTorah and the uniqueness, and get away with it over the entire rest of the 85 or 90% of Hellenized Jewry. Now I ask you, at that time, what was going on in Babel? In the Seleucid reign of Babel, there were plenty of Jews still left over. Not everyone went on Aliyah. Most didn't go on Aliyah. What did the Jews there do at the time? And I want to indicate to you that the sources do not show any strains of sympathy or support for that revolt, unlike at other times. It may have just been in order to maintain their autonomy, their position, their self-government, their balance, that they had to cool it. I am not a teacher of history, I am a lover of history. I'm simply a Malamed. I like to teach in a very elementary and even simplistic style. And don't we have to learn in Musa Haskell, isn't there a lesson that may be learned that occasionally when something happens to Nidchei Yisrael, to the tribes of Israel that are under duress and have to maintain a certain political gestalt and balance, that the first thing that you don't do is go running to the New York Times to make advertisements and to give pious pronouncements about morality and apartheid and so on and so forth. I'm nothing more than a simple teacher of children. And the mind of a child is an open mind, is a tabla rasa. I speak very simplistically. Let's leave the Seleucids. Schön. Opgelernt der Parsha. In history, let's go further. Go back to your chronology. The Parthians, there's a lot to say, not within the space of 45 minutes. Item E, the institution of a Reish Galusa. A Reish Galusa is the head of the Golus. In Eretz Yisrael, it was the Nasi, the head of the Sanhedrin, the president of the state of Israel. And here, with this idea of Jewish autonomy, with the idea that was inborn, that we are by nature foreigners in a host land that will give us economic and social and religious opportunities, we decided, however, always to have a kind of self-government. And that self-government, the Reish Galusa, was the Ma'ayana Noveya, the wellspring of religious, social, economic, and political stability. But we cannot forget Eretz Yisrael, items F and items G. The first revolt against Rome in Eretz Yisrael resulted in what? Chulban Bayis Sheni. How did that affect Bavel? It's not too far to run from northern Eretz Yisrael, from the Galil, all the way to Bavel. A few years later and decades later was the critical second revolt, the Bar Kokhba revolt, where we almost brought Mashiach, but somehow the calculations weren't correct. The Hadrianic oppressions that were merciless, the Asara Haruge Malchus that are only 10 symbolic of untold tens of thousands who were the same Kedoshim. And therefore you see that at the collapse of that revolt, with the death of Rabbi Akiva, the Asar Haruge Malchus and the rest, there is a tremendous flight to Bavel of Israeli Tanoim, because there was no way to hold out. And that's important. They were able to get to Bovel by foot, by caravan, and somehow there was a host community already planted there from the times of the first Beis HaMikdash. It wasn't Eretz Yisrael, but it allowed them to flourish. A few years later, 40 years later, item A, the Mishnah is codified. Rabbi Yehuda Anosi, we don't know, somewhere between 175 and 200 of the Common Era, the Mishnah was written, and that is a critical point. Because who would bring the Eretz Yisrael Dike Mishnah and the Tannoim and their inspiration to all of Bovel? If not for two, they are none other than Rav and his colleague Shmuel. Probably most of my time is going to be spent this morning with you in trying to get a picture of Rav and Shmuel, what they faced, and how each, through his own personality, was able to take and verpflanz and to plant in the most permanent manner 800 to 1,000 years of Torah that was uninterrupted and that ultimately gave us the finest document of the Mesorah that we have in Torah Sheba'al Peh. Finally, if you go down to item P, a fellow by the name of Cartier, probably unknown to any of us, unless we've really culled the sources. He was a Zoroastrian Kohen Gadol, chief priest, who persecutes minorities of the religious communities, and that is both Jews and Christians alike. And that's where we find an indelible mark. Have you heard of him? Do you know what he did? You know what Haman did? You know what Antiochus did with Hanno and Shivas Boneho? We know of the Asor Aruge Malchus, the martyrs of Rome. Karkia, wie bist du? I mean, where, wie hast du eingestuft? Where did you get into Jewish history so significantly that you appear on a Babylonian chronology on this second day of January, this rainy morning, to be considered? I have some surprising information for you. And needless to say, R, which is the last one from 450 to 650, once there is persecution, we have to retrench and we have to economize our spiritual efforts and focus our religious talents, and that period becomes the actual formation and the writing of Talmud Bavli, which I have no concern with at this point and in this session. Let's take it in reverse. Let's start Mamish Meshav Kapoya with the last item that I would like to do, and that's item P and Q. The Sasanian dynasty, the Sasanians were Persians in origin, and Persia gave us Zoroastrianism. You've heard of Islam. You've heard of Christianity, you've heard of the Hindu and Buddhist philosophies of life. Few are au courant and understand what Zoroastrianism is. It's not about the Zohar necessarily. It is not pagan idol worship. But it is what we call in Halacha Shituf. There is a partnership of the deity, of gods. Zoroastrianism, in a word, maintain that there were two gods, two forces, the god of light and the god of darkness. Ahura Mazda is the god of light, Ahriman is the god of darkness. These two gods or forces are constantly in dialectic conflict with one another to try to overtake the balance of the world. Daytime is the province of Ahura Mazda, the god of light, and all good can function during the day, and the nighttime is that evil, evil moment when you avoid, when humanity retrenches and comes into its shell of self and goes back until the God of Light is able to function once again and gain supremacy in the world. Yazdegerd II, one of the Zoroastrian emperors, forbade Shmirah Shabbos. Well, he should. Because Shmirah Shabbos is our testimony to Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, one unified God, not two, one. And that is the day in which we acknowledge more than any other moment in the week that there is a God. The bitter year of 468 in Bavel was called the year of Chulban Olam, the destruction of the world. Sure, the Babylonian world, when shuls were destroyed and closed up by centuries and by armies, Torah study publicly was prohibited, and children were kidnapped to be delivered to the Mazdean priests, Ahura Mazda's priests, the priests of good. This was true religious persecution, probably in its most intense form in all the years of Bavel. But my concern is that it was religious persecution by Zoroastrians, on whom I spent a few moments with you, on whom you should remember. The forces of the God of Light and his partner, the God of Darkness. The Mishnah asks, before you say Kriya Shema every single day, what do you say before Kriya Shema? And the Mishnah answers, Bashachar, in the morning, Mevorech Shtayim Lefaneho, you say two brachos before Kriya Shema, Ve'achas Le'achareho, and one bracha after Kriya Shema. Whereupon the Gemara asks, Mai Mevorech, what bracha do you say? Omar Rabbi Yaakov, Omar Rabbi Shaya. Rabbi Yaakov quoted Rabbi Shaya and said, the bracha that you say starting before Kriya Shema is Baruch Ato Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, Yotzer Or Uvorei Choshech, Oseh Shalom Uvorei Asakol. Yotzer Or, you fashion light, Uvorei Choshech, and you created darkness, light and darkness. Oseh Shalom, you are the author of peace, Uvorei Asakol, and you create everything. Yotzer Or Uvorei Choshech, the Gemara asks, that's the bracha, that's the way it should be. V'leimo, why don't we say Yotzer Or Uborei Noga, that God created light and fashioned brightness, light, brightness? Why speak of Choshech? Answers the Gemara, Ki dechsiv ka'amrinam, because you know the rule that everything that we have in Siddur must come from Tanakh. If you don't quote it directly, like an entire Mizmor of Ashrei, or the Halalukos, or the Chunaranino, or Mizmor Shili Yamashabos, or Shir Shalyom, if you don't quote it directly, the least that you must do is paraphrase what was said by some Novi or by David HaMelech. You are intrinsically bound with the Siddur into Tanakh. That bracha should paraphrase the pasuk. And do you know what the pasuk says in Yishayo? Yishayo says, Koma Yishayo, this is what Yishayo says to Melech Koresh, to King Cyrus. Such and such is going to happen. If you want to see it, is in Perek Memhei in Yishayo. Leman Yedu, so that people will know me, Mizrach Shemesh, from the east, to me, Ma'arov, and to the west. Ki Efes Biladoi, there's only one but me, Ani Hashem, Ani Avaya Ve'eno, there's no other God. I am the God, Yotze Or, who creates light, Uborei Choshech, and fashions darkness. Oseh Shalom, I bring peace and perfection, Uborei Ra, and I create evil. Shalom and Ra, Or Choshech, Shalom Ra, Or good light, Choshech, bad darkness. Shalom, the biggest bracha in the world, Ra, evil incarnate. We make a bracha and it's directly tied into some pasuk. Here's the pasuk, but we've changed something. Please tell me, what element have we dispensed with in the bracha? What word? Ra is not there. Elameata, if we are true to the principle that everything in Siddur must be tied in to the stylistic of Tanakh, Elameata, it should say, Oseh Shalom Uvorei Ra, Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam. Yotzer Or Uvorei Choshech, Oseh Shalom Uvorei Ra. It doesn't say that. Miko Amrinon Kidechsiv, who is quoting the pasuk? And if you're negating the pasuk style in the second case, Oseh Shalom uborei ra, and you've dispensed and tampered with that. Nope, let's go back. Yotzeh Or uborei noga, let's substitute light and brightness. Elo, the Gemara answers, ki dechsiv ra, there's no question about it, as it is written, ra. But v'karinan hakol, we changed ra to hakol because of lishna me'alya, euphemism. We had to watch our language. We had to speak a very fine tongue. Against whom did we have to watch our language? In the presence of whom? If none other than the Zoroastrians. We would have fallen into their hands right then and there if tefillah was not changed. And therefore Zoroastrianism is implanted with a birth pang mark every single day of the year, Shabbos and Yom Tov and Chol, with our encounter with this Sasanian Zoroastrianism in Bavel. To be able to run from the clutches of the God of light and the God of darkness. Ahura Mazda and Achriman. Shituf, God and partner, equally locked in. Yotzer Or Uvore Choshech, I am the God who created light and the absence of light. Shalom, peace, perfection, and Ra. I am the author of everything. Ani Havaya Oseh Kol Eile. There's only one God. And you, Koresh, says Yeshayahu Anovi, you, your spiritual heirs, who will be the Zoroastrians, will have to learn that and learn that well. Second imprint, also tied into Shema. Please tell me, help me along, what are the two time frames of the day in which we say Shema? B'shoch b'cha, v'kumecha. B'shoch b'cha, the time frame is night. B'kumecha, the time frame is when you get up. Now, I would never had problems with b'shoch b'cha until Johnny Carson and Jack Parr. And I never had problems with b'kumecha, sleeping through the day, until Phil Donahue. Everyone has to be up for that. However, there is one Shema that is neither b'shoch b'cha, nor is it said b'kumecha. There is one Shema that is so incredibly prominently placed that when it is said, there are probably more people at that moment in shul at any other time of that tefillah segment. It's not Nila, because Nila is when? It's b'shoch b'cha, it's already at night. Friday night? Friday night, what time? You say when you daven early. When you daven a little early. So Taki, you're right, you're thinking, well, but there's only one problem, that we daven early because of Shabbos Amalka. Because Shabbos, you got to go home and eat. You haven't been home all week to eat. The family is together, and if Shabbos is 8:30 at night, you're not going to wait. So we have a heter, and that's why we have to say it again, because it's truly not Shema. It is Limud HaTorah, it's Kriyas HaTorah, but it is not the Shema of Bekumecha, of B'shoch B'cha, I'm sorry. So you have to say it over again, B'shoch B'cha, when it's night. There's one other Shema, let's hear it. Shabbos, when they take out the Torah, That's because they knew once upon a time there would be young Israels and children would have to say Shema, so we would teach them that way. Okay? You're talking right. There's only one problem with that. There's only one problem with that. It's very often the time of Bikumecha. It's still the morning. I heard it over here somewhere. You don't say Shema at Kol Nidre. You say Shema in Ma'ariv, and it's already B'shoch B'cha. Who said something here about Musa? Huh? Shabbos Musa in Kedusha. Mimkomo Yifem Berachamim, from your heavenly abode you'll shine upon us. And give us the grace of morning and night that we rededicate our entire being to you. Twice a day, with unremitting love, we say it. Musaf zmano kol hayom. Musaf, you don't have to say in the morning. Musaf, you can say in the afternoon if necessary. Obviously, it's reason magdimin lemitzos. If you're already davening shachris, you'll daven musaf. But the shema in kedusha of musaf is misplaced. What kind of a yichus is there of shema over there? In 468, the year of Chulban Olam, synagogues were destroyed. I repeat for you, Torah study was prohibited, and children were kidnapped and delivered to the Mazdean priests. The whole of Jewish society went to pot. You couldn't come together and say Pa'amayim be'ahavo Shema Omrim because you didn't know if you'd make it out alive. And the brilliance of Chazal at that time was that after the centuries were gone, after the guards were no longer posted, after they went to Shikas Achon and drink in the bars to have their lunch, they quickly got together for a Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shemayim. At the wrong time, but Rabbeinu Shel Olam, you already understand why we couldn't do it at the right time. Zoroastrianism breathes down our neck, and these Mishagoyim become infuriated by one word. Which one? Echod. Kol hamarich be'echod. If you give kavonot to echod and you stretch it out, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem echod. B'kol teichai, with all the spiritual energy that you can muster, is muftach lo shuv ben olam habo. That's what we mean when we ask for a ticket to olam habo. Under such circumstances, you will defy the Sasanian, Zoroastrian, Ayatollah Mishugoyim. And so, were these things not in Sidur, would I bother you with Sasanians? The New York Times has much more about the Ayatollah mentality. What do I have to go back so many millennia to Mishugoyim? We have enough Mishugoyim today. It's the same Mishugas all over. Which leaves me only one thing. And that is the period of Rav and Shmuel, what we call the naissance, the birth of the period of Amoroyim in Bavel, after the Mishnah is codified, after the collapse of the real Chulban, which was Bal Kochba, at a point when people in Eretz Yisrael didn't want to go on any longer. And let's see what we can uncover about Rav and Shmuel. For around those personalities revolve all of the problems of trying to build a Babylonian community. Imagine, chas v'sholom, that Eretz Yisrael falls. Our children, our grandchildren, our families no longer can learn in the Chevrons and in the Ponoviches and the Merkaz HaTorah, and Or HaTorah, and Eish HaTorah, and Dvar Yerushalayim, and Gush, and the untold numbers of Hesder Yeshivos, and Yavne, and Shalavim. If I left one out, it is not because I do not contribute to any of them. Imagine if this flow were stopped. Collapses. Think of the end, the few years, the decades before the doors truly lock. Think as a baba, think as a mama, think as a shvester, think as a child. Why do you want to go? It's so much easier here. If you want an out-of-town yeshiva, go to Lakewood. You want the Kiddush of Yerushalayim, go to Muncie, Kew Gardens Hills, Forest Hills, Borough Park, Williamsburg. Why do you have to go Schlepsach? And what if Chas V'Sholom the plane blows up? You know it's not safe. You know we are not living under our own steam the way it used to be from 1948 to... Torah is the Rika. Learn Torah. You don't have to go there. There can be Torah elsewhere. I shudder to think of the reality of such of a conversation. But these realities face the entire Jewish community in the period of Rabbi Shmuel. Okay? The last time I saw that look is when I shipped my eldest son off to Yerushalayim for 2 years, and I saw that look in my mother's face. It's real. The period of Rav Shmuel is the period when Bavel is converted to the dominant Torah center of the Jewish world, because in Eretz Yisrael you could not survive. And there is no people as practical on the one hand and as stiff-necked and dreamy-eyed on the other hand as the Jew. Hayinu kicharmim, we dreamed of what it would be in Eretz Yisrael. But I want to tell you something, we sang those words with tears. But practically speaking, Yidmus Machna Levin, so we struck deep roots in Bavel. Because economically, politically, socially, and religiously, it was a haven for us. We hit the right spot. The period of the Amoraim begins. But that is a period of tension. Tanoim were only in Eretz Yisrael. There's no such thing as a Mishnah and a Halacha in a Mishnah being stated outside of Eretz Yisrael. Because Ein Torah Ketoras Eretz Yisrael. There's no such thing as Torah outside of Eretz Yisrael. It's fake. It's ersatz. It's artificial. We fool ourselves to think that it's Torah. This is the period of Tanoim. And here come Rav and Shmuel, and they are the interpreters of Mishnah. And they build Torah centers, they build Muncie's, they build Lakewood's, they build Washington Heights, they build Flatbushes and Borough Parks, etc., etc., Cleveland and Los Angeles and Scranton, Philadelphia and the rest. They were the direct heirs of the Tanoim, and both of them, Rav and Shmuel, learned with the Tano of the Tanoim, Rabbi Yehuda Hanossi. That incredible genius who saw that one day it may not be so easy to set down Shisha Sidrei Mishnah as he did in the years 175 to 200 of our common era, when there was a little respite, when there was detente with Antoninus, with the Roman Empire, when there was a simple relaxation of tensions, and Herr Eingehabt, and he was able to go ahead and do what he did. And it isn't long that the Gemara records that these two gentlemen, Rav and Shmuel, mesmerized the entire community, so that Bavel was split into two hegemonies. Bavel in the city of Sura and its entire region, Nohu Kerav. Any minhog was Rav's minhog. In the Harda of Chol Farvado, and the Harda and all of its suburbs were totally mesmerized by the ways of Shmuel. Well, basically it's a power play. Is the chief rabbinate of Israel going to paskin on halachas? Or is 770 Eastern Parkway, or 145 East Broadway, or 185th Street in Amsterdam Avenue, or Bedford Avenue and Lee Avenue going to paskin on what the halachas are going to be? Okay? You get the picture? Tachlis. Listen to in between the lines. I counted in Shas 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times that this statement is made. It is obviously made in Eretz Yisrael. Bavloi tipshoi, you stupid Babylonians. Mishum diasve ba'aro de chashucha. Because you sit in a dark land, a land devoid of Shechina. Amrei Shema Tzor Demechashchon. So you derive halachas that are as dark and pustenledic as the night itself. And Rashi quickly says, when they don't know the reason for our halacha, so they make it up from their own mind and from their own stupid hearts. Bavli Tipshoi, what's going on over here? Who is talking? If not the yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael, if not the pain and the anguish of seeing a Torah center, a population center, an economic center for Jews overtaking Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. How do you react? How do you stand and talk to your children and your grandchildren? So you know what you do? You argue ad aminum. You attack the person. Bavli tipshoi. You stupid fools. King Minor. Do you know what I sacrificed and what your grandfather sacrificed to be able to hew out a little corner in Me'er Shalom or Bnei Brak? Or in this little kibbutz in the Galil or in the Negev? You're going to run to the big city, to the big times, to Nardo, to Sura, to Pumpadisa. They're idiots over there. The air we breathe gives us a mind, gives us a gestalt to be able to understand and perceive Shechina and tradition unbroken from the times of the Beis HaMikdash and before. For a couple of dollars for an apartment and for a chandelier in the bathroom, that's what you're going to go for? Not the only one. I told you, it's not one statement. 8 or 9 times I counted it. Challenge me by simply calling my answering machine and I will write all the pages for you so that you'll be able to investigate it on your own. Rav had his most eloquent Talmud. His Talmud Muvak was Rav Huna. When Rav Huna died, he wanted to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. Calls Pinchas Mandel or Riverside Chapels. Overnight, 24 hours, and we get you. Simple. You know what the hesped was once Rav Huna reached Eretz Yisrael? In Moed Kotten, the Gemara, those who were maspid him said, Ro'ui hoira abenu, our Rebbe Rav Huna was worthy Shetishre olav Shechina, to be a Navi. But he did not grasp the Shechina. You know why? Ela shebebovel gormole. Because he lived his life and he was a Rosh Yeshiva, you know where? In Lakewood. In Bovel. Those were the words of Hesped that were said in Eretz Yisrael. No other generation, no other time almost in history could people identify with this dialectic tension than now. Ashrei zoich eloi. Fortunate is the one who can merit understanding these tensions and then go ahead and assure that domi vechelbi, my blood and my adipose tissue, my fat, my neshoma, ruach, and guf will be totally, totally given over to make certain that Eretz Yisrael reigns supreme always. When I see a shegetz, and this is a political statement, a shegetz who doesn't begin to know the difference between Amotzi Lechem Min HaOretz and Birchas HaTorah, whose last vestige of Yiddishkeit is a fake 14-carat gold chai around his neck, dark and swarthy, cursing like a drunken Irishman, with the last bit of almost Yiddishkeit knocked out of him, but he tills the land of Eretz Yisrael. I fall on my feet and kiss his toes. Rav and Shmuel. Alright, that was just a breather. Let's get down to Tachlis before we run out. Rav was born in Bovel. 25 years he went on Aliyah and he learned Torah from Rebbe and Rab Chia and Rab Gamliel. went to learn Torah in Eretz Yisrael, because ain't Torah ketaras Eretz Yisrael. Torah learned over there is not like Torah learned in Bavel. He returned to Bavel for a short period, Yerida. We don't know exactly why. There may have been personal factors, a shidduch. There may have been family, economic reasons. We don't know exactly why. But we do know that when he left, and that's why we say it may be a shidduch, Rab Chiya, his Rebbe, said, I want to give you a bracha, my dear Talmud. Hokel Arachamon, merciful God, Yatzilcho midovo hakoshim bimoves. May he save you from something worse than death. Whereupon the Talmud asked him, what could be worse than death? And the Rebbe quoted the pasuk in Koheles of that cynic who had 1,000 wives. Umotzei ani mal mimoves eso isha. Chas v'shalom that you should get the wrong one, because if you'll get the wrong one, your Torah career is dead. I tell you clearly that I am not a chauvinist. There's a lady over there who will tell you that the wife that I have and the mother-in-law that I have, you cannot survive in this world and be a chauvinist. They taught me well, long before ERA and NOW. He goes on Aliyah a second time to learn more Torah, and then returns permanently to Bavel. He was the direct conveyor of the Torah of the Tanoim, of Rebbe, in Bavel. Now you know, when you have a Rebbe, like Rabbi Yehuda Anossi, you want every tape, you want every message, you want every stimulus, every chidush that possibly can be gotten. May he be blessed at Me'ev Eshim Shono for his ability to transmit and orchestrate to his chassidim his messages through the media, through publications, through tapes, through cable TV, as he transmits from 770 to all those, all the way in Australia, in the North Pole, and the South Pole, and in Alaska. And Vino Ayid Kenarin Krichen. The Lubavitcher Rebbe goes ahead and capitalizes on it. You can understand it. They wanted the same from the Tanoim. But, despite the fact that Rav was one of the best Talmidim that the Tanoim had, that Rav Yehuda Anossi had, the Gemara relates, very simply, that he did not get the true ultimate smicha that was given by Tanoim to Tanoim. The Gemara relates that Rav could have been Yora Yora, he could worry about a chicken. He could tell you if it's glad kosher or not glad kosher. Yodin Yodin, he can sit down as a dayan and decide who is right and who is wrong in this case of monetary matter. But the highest and the ultimate was Yatir Bechor is Yatir. The Bechor Behemoth, the oldest Behemoth, had to be given as a korban, Matnes Kahuna, so to speak. But if it had some kind of physical blemish, it didn't qualify. And there was pidyon. There was exchange. Rav knew these halachas. And you needed to know these halachas for the ultimate. But they refused to give him smicha. And we want to know why. There are several reasons. But if you read between any of the reasons, lines, you will find that it may have been that you didn't want this treasure of true smicha to leave and develop bother. Commit yourself to Eretz Yisrael. Be a Rabbi Akiva. Be a Yehuda ben Becerra. Be an Asoa Ugemalchus. Stop running. Buy a house. Live in the house. Stay here and die here if necessary. Don't come back with Pinchas Mandel. And then we'll consider smicha. Imagine if Rav was your son. Would you attend the next Mizrahi women's meeting or Emunah convention? But you've got to understand, he tried twice. That's why he went to Eretz Yisrael. He probably tried twice to get smicha, but he didn't. Was that any chisorin? Was that any defect in his learning? Oh no. For when Rav came, the entire Babylonian Jewish community shook. As a matter of fact, he came to Nahavdah, that was the borough park of that time. And they weren't too receptive to him. You know why? Because when he said Torah, he said better than all of them. And when he said Torah, he said more and more authoritative and more clearly and more direct than all of them. And a human being is born, no matter who you are, with jealousy. And ultimately he left Nahavdah and he had to go to a smaller town near Borough Park, near that center. It was Hutzal. Hutzal probably was a place where Ezra, before he left, lived, and his Beis Medrash and the Shechina rested on Ezra. But from Hutzal he went ultimately to the city of Sura. He picked Sura. It was an out-of-town, out-of-way community that had many Jews. There was only one problem. There was absolutely no way to understand what Torah was all about. There were many, says Rav Shrira Gaon, there were many among the Jews. But afilu dine yisra heter, they didn't know what was kosher and treif. That's how far they were. Omar Rav, and Rav decided, they shaved kan, that's where I'm going to settle. Kedei shetehei Torah b'makom zeh, so that I can relive Torah and revive Torah in this segment of Jewish humanity.